from the elections in France to charges of sexual harassment against Bill O'Reilly. We've got you covered right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Is anyone surprised that things continue to shake worldwide? That there's something new, something different, the old being challenged or the status quo being challenged and then maybe not being challenged? Talking about France and beyond. Hey, friends, welcome to today's broadcast. This is Michael Brown. We've got a lot of great things planned for you on today's show. And as always, or virtually always, our phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Before we get to France, before we talk about Donald Trump gets close to the end of his first 100 days, before we talk about Earth Day and the Science March, before we talk about some dialogue I had with folks who identify as alt-right, and by the way, some of the dialogue with a couple of folks, again, not representative of everyone on the alt-right. And the alt-right is not monolithic, but interesting that folks take exception to being called racist and then identify as racist in everything they say. But that's another subject we'll get to. Before any of that, I've got a question for you. Men, women alike, I'd love your feedback. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's say a woman comes to work and she is in suggestive attire. Let's say she's wearing a very low-cut top. And the guys at work or her boss, they kind of check her out. By the way, I'm not saying women should dress like that. I don't believe women should be, godly women specifically, should be dressing in such a way as to draw sexual attention to themselves. But let's say she dresses like that. Let's say the guys kind of check her out. They stare at her, all right? Let's say her boss does. Is that a form of sexual harassment, or is she getting the attention she asked for? Or is she totally unaware that her top is low and revealing? Or does she feel a pressure to do that because of the strongly sexist society in which we live, or I should say over-sexed society in which we live, which is sometimes sexist as well? Is it sexual harassment if she notices guys checking her out when she comes in that outfit? She comes in a super short, super tight miniskirt, and she notices the guys looking at her legs. Is that sexual harassment, or is that, hey, she got what she asked for? Is that a matter of, come on, it's just people being people? I'm not talking about from a believing gospel-based standard. From a believing gospel-based standard, godly woman would not seek to look unbeautiful, but she would seek to look modest, for sure, and she wouldn't be showing herself off to other men. And a godly man would not be checking out the ladies. If a lady was dressed inappropriately, he'd look the other way rather than check her out. So we understand those things. But I'm asking about sexual harassment. I posted this question on Twitter. It was late last night. It was like 2:33 in the morning. But I thought, you know, I'm just going to do this. And then people join in more in the morning. I asked the question, if a woman wears a low-cut top to work, is it sexual harassment if a man checks her out? And then I repeated yes, no for female and yes, no for male, so we could know exactly who was responding. The answers are fascinating, to say the least. And I'm bringing this up because of the whole Bill O'Reilly situation. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Yeah, so Bill O'Reilly is out at Fox. Was it just a power play within the Murdoch family? Was O'Reilly genuinely guilty of sexual harassment over a period of years? And should he have been removed or disciplined a long time ago? O'Reilly says all the charges are unfounded. Right now, I'm making no judgment on the situation, not knowing any more about it than you know. But I'm asking the larger questions about sexual harassment in the workplace today. Again, to weigh in, 866-34-TRUTH. Maybe you could argue that for a woman to dress suggestively, I mean very suggestively, in an obvious and overt way, that that is sexual harassment of her male coworkers or bosses, that she is harassing them by dressing like that. That's another side to it, right? Never heard that raised or don't hear it raised. On the flip side, you say, what, crazy? Come on, there are guys, if a woman came in dressed in a sack, they'd be lustfully attracted to her, and they think filthy thoughts all the time. And what are you going to do, require them to wear burkas to work? Fair question. Absolutely a fair question. We tell our daughters as they were growing up, I'd say, you don't understand how boys think. And I said, they're trying to check you out. They're trying to, look in your shirt. No, Dad. I said, that's what boys do. Not every boy, but many and probably most. Yeah, and men as well do those kinds of things. And that's why being disciplined with your eyes, with your thought life, is part of following the Lord, part of self-control. And women not seeking to present themselves as sexual objects, that's part of godliness. You can be beautiful while modest. But when it comes to the O'Reilly case, I want to say a few things plainly. Number one, I'm not denying the reality of sexual harassment in the workplace. I'm not denying it. I'm not minimizing it. I'm not denying that some men feel they have the right to treat women as sexual objects. Again, not denying it, not minimizing that reality. I'm not denying that many women feel constant pressure to dress and look sensually. I'm not denying that. And I'm not denying that some judges have outrageously implied that rape victims basically deserve what they got because of the way they were dressed. You didn't dress like that, you might not be raped. Yeah, think of pouring salt in a very open wound already. So I'm not denying any of these issues. I'm not minimizing any of these issues. What I am asking is where the line is properly drawn. Thankfully, in the decades that I've served in ministry, leading schools, teaching at schools, leading ministry organizations, we've not had issues with these things. We've had people who are modest. We've had people who understood what it meant to work in a ministry environment. And we've not had issues like this, but I'm sure these are issues that are faced in the workplace all the time. Again, I don't want to minimize them, but I want to ask about reality. So one of the women who came forth at the end to bring charges against Bill O'Reilly, African-American woman, I mentioned that because one of the charges that she brought was that he referred to her as hot chocolate one time. Now, she said it made her feel like she was on a plantation, paraphrase her words. Did he say that? I don't know. If he did, was that harassment? Was that racial harassment? Was that just being cute? Maybe in his world, it was just being cute. Just asking questions. She claimed O'Reilly told her, looking good there, girl, one time when she was getting off the elevator. Is that sexual harassment? A woman comes on the job in a nice outfit, and a man says, hey, you're looking good. Is that sexual harassment? Is it the way he says it? Is it how he looks when he says it? Is it, as being claimed on some college campuses, a microaggression to say that as if to say, you're of no worth, no value whatsoever. I don't esteem you as a peer, as a colleague in any way. I'm simply looking at you sexually. Is that what is being said? Or if you, as a woman, wore a really nice new outfit to work one day and nobody said a word to you, I'm talking about not just women, but the men, nobody said a word to you, would that bother you? Would you expect some compliments? Perquita Burgess claimed O'Reilly would come by her desk and would leer at her up and down. She felt like he was looking at her cleavage and it made her feel uncomfortable. And maybe he did this. Maybe that's who he is. Yeah, in my book, if you did that, you leer at someone, you come over, you look them all up and down all the time. Yeah, that would be sexual harassment. On the flip side, if someone was wearing a low-cut top, say a woman was wearing a low-cut top, she put it on, she stood in the mirror, looked in the mirror when she put it on, and a coworker comes by and is talking to her, and she notices that he's staring at that place that's partly uncovered, is that sexual harassment? 866-348-7884. What I found interesting on my Twitter poll was that the responses from men and women in terms of their feelings were almost equal. That I found fascinating. The responses were almost equal. In other words, it wasn't that the man overwhelmingly said, no, it's not sexual harassment. And the woman overwhelmingly said, you better believe it is. To the contrary, and just looking at percentages now, the percentage of women who said it was not was higher than the percentage of men who said it was not. Let me grab a call. Tyler in Monroe, North Carolina, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. What's your take on this?
My take, it's a little bit complicated. Staring down at a woman's breast on a low-cut top, I wouldn't say it's sexual harassment, but it depends on how long you do it. If you stare for 20 seconds, then it becomes that. But I think it's all, you know, about class. But we do have to realize that it's about political correctness as well, going just run amok. Sorry, I'm a little nervous on the radio right now. But,
no, we're just chatting. We're good. Yeah, so, okay, the first thing is if somebody, and again, hopefully godly men are careful with their eyes and godly women are modest in their dress, but we're just talking the general secular workplace. So it's one thing for a guy to notice something. It's another thing for a guy to stare and make a woman feel uncomfortable, right? I'd make that distinction. But right, the problem is the PC environment in which we're living. So expand on that. PC in what sense?
Political correctness run amok. I mean it in the sense that, let's say even 10 years ago, I mean, I'm only 23, but I can remember that you were able to speak your mind and they wouldn't jump to the racist card or sexist card. I just believe, political correctness has run amok. Yes, Bill O'Reilly, you know, did that stuff, but if he didn't do it on the show, then I don't see why, you know, the need to fire him. I never liked the guy. I thought he was pretentious, but we have freedom of speech.
Yeah, let's just separate two things, though. One is the PC attitude run amok. So I'm glad that we're more sensitive to things that can be insulting, that can be racist or sexist in comments that we don't realize. But it's gone to, you're right, crazy, crazy extremes. And just simple comments are now taken as microaggressions or as being somehow insults or jibes. And so I'm totally with you on that. But as far as O'Reilly and work, let's think of this. Let's say that someone was a prominent TV host and was found to have raped someone. Well, they didn't rape them on the job. They didn't rape them on the TV set. But obviously, not only are they going to jail, but they're going to lose their job even if they didn't go to jail. If someone was found guilty of extortion, you know, and they are stealing money, you know, from somebody in some scam, even if they didn't do it related to work, they'd suffer the penalty. So that I understand. I have no issue with that. If he was guilty, and again, I don't know, if he was guilty of genuine sexual harassment, of telling women, okay, you want to get ahead on the job here, you're going to have to sleep with me or something like that. If he's guilty of that, of course, that's the kind of thing you lose your job for, no matter how prominent you are. The question is, if he'd been a liberal host, would the attack come against him the same way? Or would there be a different standard? Those are other questions. But Tyler, I appreciate you weighing in. Your comments are heard and taken note of. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So just to stay on this issue of sexual harassment for another moment, let me repeat. I'm not minimizing the reality of sexual harassment in the workplace. I'm not minimizing that there are men that feel they have the right to treat women as sexual objects and women who feel they need to climb the ladder of success by presenting themselves as sexual objects. Not denying any of that, nor am I minimizing the problems associated with that. And it must be very difficult for women today, to with all of the airbrushed and plastic surgery enhanced images out there. There must be pressure on women to look a certain way, and then they may just try to dress a way that they think looks nice, and to some man, that's presenting themselves as a seductive object. Men can misread things. On the other hand, women often know exactly how they are presenting themselves. So there are different aspects to this, but I don't want to, for a moment, downplay the problems that exist or minimize them. And when I hear accusations, say, against Bill Cosby, and these were more extreme than the charges against Bill O'Reilly. Well, you hear one or two, you wonder. When you hear enough, you begin to think, okay, this does sound like the person's guilty, and you still wait for truth to emerge as best as possible. So with Bill O'Reilly, number one, I have no idea if the charges are true or not. If they were true, did it surprise me? No. Why would it surprise me? He's a man of power and influence and prestige. And that can easily get to your head. And although he's of Catholic background, I don't look at him as a true Christian who'd be walking closely with the Lord and having godly convictions in his life, although he'd have good moral standards in many other areas. On the other hand, it wouldn't surprise me that people are coming against him with false charges. I mean, it seems pretty orchestrated the way the New York Times released the story at the same time that advertisers were being influenced by Media Matters to pull away from O'Reilly, and just kind of the perfect storm hitting at a certain moment seemed orchestrated. But putting those things aside, I look at some of the accusations and I scratch my head. Others, I think, yeah, that's if he did it, that's terrible. And if he had to step down because of it, so be it. But others I look at and think, what's so bad about that? For example, Perquita Burgess says, O'Reilly told her, looking good there, girl, one time when she was getting off the elevator. Looking good there, girl. Now, in some cultures, referring to a woman as girl itself would be insulting, all right? Or for a man to dare say to a woman he's not married to, looking good. Yeah, look, if there was a female employee in our ministry organization, and she came in a nice outfit, all right, I wouldn't compliment her. I wouldn't say, boy, that's a really nice outfit. I mean, it'd be the rarest of rare. Why? Because I'm my wife. It's that simple. And I'm the leader of an organization in ministry, so I wouldn't do it. You know, if I might say, oh, new hairdo or something like that, if it was that conspicuous, like, how can you not say something, right? Now, others Others, I have male colleagues that would have no problem. Say, oh, great outfit, really nice outfit. That's fine, perfectly fine. But for O'Reilly to say what she said, and now this is national news, he said to her, looking good there, girl, that sounds to me like a witch hunt, if that's sexual harassment. Okay? And again, I wonder if, and ladies, you can tell me, if you got a really nice new outfit and you came in to work one day wearing it for the first time, and none of the men, just talking about men now, none of the men said to you, hey, nice outfit. And you got friends there and coworkers and a boss or two, whatever. Would that bother you? Would you think, how come nobody noticed it? Or would you say, well, they can say it's a nice outfit, but they can't tell me I look good? I'm just asking. 866-34-TRUTH. Take one more call. James in Charlotte, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, I actually agree with everything you just said. But I think it is kind of a witch hunt, as you said, because, for example, if he did say you have to sleep with me to move up in your job, that is sexual harassment.
Yep.
But saying, looking good there, girl, that could go either way. I think it all depends on how it is said. For instance, I tell coworkers and other women, hey, you look nice today. And it's just all about how you say it. They never feel threatened or anything like that. But also at the same time, I ask them, do you mind if I say that? I just think, hey, you look nice today. There's that. But if you'd like me to keep that to myself, I can.
Yeah. I think it's all again, it all depends on the type of person you are, the type of person they are, the kind of relationship you have. If you've known each other for a period of time and you've always conducted yourselves with the highest ethic, then all those things, can be fine and appropriate. Why wouldn't you be surprised if there was a witch hunt to take down O'Reilly?
Well, like I said, if he did say you got to sleep with me to move up, that's
yeah, of course, 100%. No but, justification, no minimizing,
no.
Right?
But Bill O'Reilly has, he's known as a controversial guy. He will say things to upset the liberals or, let's say, upset the right wing that most people won't agree with. Bill O'Reilly is known as someone who, will say what he means and will say it out just no matter what. So if he said, looking good, girl, I don't think anybody should necessarily be surprised with what he said, because he said even worse things in the past about, let's say, the veterans or stuff like that.
Got it. Got it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. If he speaks his mind on TV, he's going to speak his mind probably in private as well. Hey, James, I appreciate you weighing in. Listen, let me just say a few things, and I'm writing an article about this, probably post it tonight or tomorrow, about the subject, just to think it through with folks. But let me say once more that I believe that we should treat one another with respect and that we should take the higher road. When there are two options, a lower road and a higher road, take the higher road and act as people of dignity, especially if you claim to be a believer, if you claim to be a follower of Jesus. Then by all means, conduct yourself with certain dignity. And women, don't try to present yourselves to draw sexual attention from the opposite sex. If you're married, you have your own relationship with your husband, but don't demean yourself in doing that, and don't be a stumbling block to others. If you've been blessed with a beautiful body, then don't make that a curse, and don't make it a stumbling block for others. All right, but that being said, we need to stand up to the extreme political correctness of this day with sobriety. Say, hey, sexual harassment, let's work together against it. Sexism, oversex culture, let's address it. At the same time, let's be realistic. Let's be sober. So in my poll, 6% of women and 14% of men said, yes, it's sexual harassment. 26% of women and 54% of men said it's not, and that's because the men higher proportion on Twitter. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, before I switch over to France, let me just clarify something on the polling data that I did. We've got on Facebook about 530,000 followers there. And on YouTube, it's much smaller. YouTube is what, 25.8 thousand. But it's much easier to do a poll on Twitter. All right, and we've got about 30,000 plus subscribers to our YouTube channel. But it's much easier to do a poll on Twitter because you simply post your question. Again, it has to be within a certain number of characters. And then you can give up to four options, and you only have so much space for each of those options. So what that means is that you can get an instant response tallied. On Facebook, we've got to read through the responses and then compile where people come out. On Facebook, we're probably about 55% female, 45% male. I only know this because they're demographics. You just go and it tells you. Although our largest single demographic is probably men 18 to 35, thereabouts. And then right after that, women 18 to 35. So we've got a good number of young people there, which is positive. But Twitter seems to be much more male presence than female presence on Twitter. And I'm looking for the poll, which for the moment seems to have disappeared here on Twitter. Here we go. So 32% of the responders were female so far, and the other 68% male. So out of the 32% female who responded, 26% said, no, it's not sexual harassment if a woman wears a low-cut top to work and a man checks her out. 6% of the women said it's sexual harassment. So the no's were more than four times the amount of the yeses. All right? So over 75% of the responses, if you multiply it, right, over 75% said no. Of the men, they were 68%. 14% said yes, it is sexual harassment. 54% said no, it's not sexual harassment. Now notice this. It's slightly under 75% of the men who said it's not. It's slightly over 75% of the women who said it's not. So the women, slightly higher percentage, saying no, it's not sexual harassment. Now, why is that the case? Wouldn't you have thought that the women would have been more prone to say this is sexual harassment? What's my interpretation of the polling? My interpretation is that the women are saying consciously, yeah, if you dress like that, you know what you're doing, and you even want the attention. And the men are saying, look, I've got to treat women with more respect, and I don't want to be sexist in my answer. Hence, the men are responding with more sensitivity, shall we say, or care about the sexual harassment charge than the women. Again, it's no surprise that happened for the reason stated. Now, I could be wrong, but that's my guess. Men want to be more careful in how they answer this. Women are being more candid. Again, we're only looking at not even 500 votes so far, and it's my interpretation of data on a page, but I found it very, very interesting. Kiki wrote, that's why women wear revealing stuff, whether they admit or not, so men will look at them. Greg said, yes, but do women have a responsibility of dressing themselves properly? Men are visual. Let's be real. Susan said, women should respect themselves more if they want to be respected. Sean, both sides have a responsibility. Yeah, just looking at some answers here. Very interesting. We'll be right back. We're going to France.
The line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Yeah, Matt, too much information. Got it in terms of certain outfits. All clear. All right. All right. We're switching over. We're switching now from sexual harassment issues to French politics. So what happens in the elections yesterday, and not surprisingly, is that Marine Le Pen, the National Front Party, which is normally branded extreme right wing nationalist party, she got 21.7%, it was 22% of the votes. And Marcon, who was from a so-called centrist moderate party, he got slightly higher, about 23% of the vote. And you had other candidates, but the so-called mainstream candidates, the ones that would be the equivalent of our Republicans and Democrats, did not make it. For the first time in decades and decades and decades, neither of them represent who will now join in the runoff. So you have now the two top candidates. Now, according to what's expected, with another conservative candidate saying, throw the votes towards Marcon, we don't want Le Pen to get in, it seems that Marine Le Pen will lose. Now, anything could happen. There could be another horrific terror attack, and that could further shift opinion. But let's try to analyze this. You say, well, what happened to the other candidates? Well, the main party, Socialist Party, led by the current president, is terribly unpopular. The party that would be kind of the conservative equivalent of the Republican Party, that should have done well. In many ways, that should have done well because it would stand for French security and stand against radical Islam without having some of the extremist leanings that the Le Pen family has been known for over the years. But check this out. Personal scandals brought them down. Yep. So looking at a headline on Breitbart, Francis Fillon leads establishment conservatives to historic defeat. Former Premier Francois Fillon was one of the early favorites to become president. This is AP News from France. But in the end, he led the French right to a historic defeat as a fake job scandal engulfed his campaign. Isn't that amazing? You're talking about potentially the fate of a nation. You're talking about the direction of a nation for years to come. You're talking about issues of security and economic strength and relationship to the rest of Europe and the rest of the world. And perhaps Fillon could have been the candidate to lead the way with a strong conservative stance. But personal scandals destroyed the whole thing. You say, on what level? Are you ready? The former prime minister was charged in March with misuse of public funds over the employment of his British-born wife, Penelope, as a parliamentary assistant for 15 years. That's the fiasco. That's the scandal. It was a severe blow to the 63-year-old who clinched the nomination for the Republican Party in November by presenting himself as unsullied by the scandals that surrounded his rival and former boss, ex-president Sarkozy. But his failure to win a place in the May 7th presidential runoff also marks the first time since 1958 that France's main right-wing party has failed to make it to the second round. It was said to be a fight which the right could not lose and which has ended in a lamentable fiasco, said Jean-François Copé, not sure the pronunciation, former head of the Union for a Popular Movement. The right has been swept away. The right has just experienced its April 21st, he said, referring to April 21st, 2002, when socialist candidate Lionel Jospin was knocked out in the first round by Jean-Marie Le Pen, whose daughter Marine will take on centrist Emmanuel Macron in 2 weeks' time. Did I call him Marcon instead of Macron? I think I did. For Phil on the devastating allegations that Penelope had earned 680,000 euros for a fictional role were first reported by this newspaper in January. He denied things, and anyway, that's what hurt him even more. Isn't that wild? One scandal could sink a party and a leading politician. Yeah, understandably so. But you've got these major national issues, and that's what sinks things. So how bad is Marine Le Pen? Her opposition is a man who is much more liberal, who will not try to pull France out of the European Union, who in that sense is less nationalistic. Will he deal properly with radical Islam, one of the major problems in France? Excellent chance that he will not decisively, despite what he says. So then what's wrong with Marine Le Pen? Is she being tarred and feathered because of what her father did? You say, well, what did her father do? Well, he's a Holocaust denier. He has been fined multiple times for Holocaust denial. He once said, quote, if you take a 1,000-page book on World War II, the concentration camps take up only 2 pages and the gas chambers 10 to 15 lines. This is what one calls a detail. Yeah, he's a known anti-Semite with some extreme views on other subjects. So is Marine Le Pen simply her father's daughter? There's an article on Fusion.net, 5 terrifying facts about Marine Le Pen and the French far right. Number one, Marine Le Pen is her father's daughter. Well, on the flip side, she kicked her own father out of the party. She kicked anti-Semites out of the party. She's saying, in that respect, I am not my father's daughter. On the other hand, she has said that extremist mosques should be shut down and the preachers and leaders should, excuse me, be kicked out of the country. So let's say you've got an immigrant, a Muslim immigrant from another country. They're in France. They are preaching violence from the pulpits of their mosque. Should they be expelled? I've got no problem with that. If they're saying overthrow the government, you're an immigrant in another country, and you're saying let's violently overthrow the government or let us attack the non-believers, let us kill them, or you're saying after a terror attack, good, this was to the glory of Allah, good, why shouldn't you be expelled? Why should you be able to stay? Explain that. And should these mosques be monitored? Yes, absolutely. I've got no issue with that. That's just security. Doesn't matter if there's religious guys or not. If it was a Christian church with the same rhetoric, yes, they should be monitored. If you had some immigrant pastor that came into America and they were preaching the massacre of a certain part of our population, they should be wiped out, they should be destroyed, here's how to build bombs. Yeah, why should they have the right to stay in the country when they are seeking to foment violence against people within that country? The problem is that Marine Le Pen, in order to come against radical Islam, is also saying, look, we have to have equality in the way we treat Muslims and Jews. And she has said a couple of things that have really raised concerns. One is that Jews living in France as citizens cannot have dual citizenship with Israel. They cannot have dual citizenship. If they want to stay as French citizens, they will have to drop their Israeli citizenship. That, to me, is an example of an extreme and unhealthy nationalism. She has also said that Jewish men should not wear the kippah, the head covering, yarmulke, as it's called in Yiddish. They should not wear that in public. And she's going to be calling for equal sacrifices for Muslims as well. This makes me wonder, are Catholic priests in France allowed to dress as priests? Are Catholic nuns allowed to dress as nuns? Although the country is tremendously secular, it still considers itself in certain ways Catholic, although, as I say, it's tremendously secular in its culture and outlook. It is as humanistic a country as you'll find. But what about wearing a cross in public? Should that be disallowed? So my problem is, in dealing with radical Islam, she's now dealing unfairly with Jews. By the way, I have a new article. If you haven't read it yet, just go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And it's entitled Marine Le Pen and the Jews of France. It's complicated, but clear. I'll give you my perspective when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So Berlazar, the chief rabbi of Russia, has said that if Le Pen gets elected, French Jews should leave. One of my colleagues says that is just so short-sighted. The French right is not the enemy of French Jews. But then I pointed out that, hey, Jews get scapegoated all the time. If things go bad in the country, it does not take much for sentiments to turn against the Jewish people. They're the cause of it. They're the guilty ones. They control the money. They control the media. They control this. They control that. It's the Jews. You'd be amazed how much ugly stuff I see posted on our YouTube channel and other places where there's public discussion going on. Virulent, anti-Semitic, ugly, ugly stuff. And some of it from professing Christians. So I don't know that I agree with Chief Rabbi Berlazar. Obviously, he has his finger on the pulse of world Jewry more than I do. On the flip side, he's praising Vladimir Putin in Russia and for the liberties and freedoms Jews have there and now. That's interesting. There's definitely been a crackdown on religious freedom in certain other ways, especially towards evangelicals, or I should say non-Russian Orthodox Christians in the country. But he lives there. He lives there. So he knows the situation better than I do. But should Jews leave France? I say they should be on their guard. If Marine Le Pen gets elected, be on your guard. On the one hand, she certainly could be of help to the Jewish population by fighting against radical Islam, naming it for what it is, exposing it for what it is, coming against it for what it is. Certainly. On the other hand, what if she treats Jews in an unfair way? Can't wear religious garb. You shouldn't wear a head covering. Can't have dual citizenship. That's negative. So some questions I raise in my article, and there's an editorial I saw after I was writing my article in Haaretz, which is a very left-leaning Israeli publication. And the article said, Marine Le Pen's instinct is right. Fighting an Islamic takeover requires France to shed its guilt and shame over its past. But her desire for foolish consistency means Vichy and Jewish identity are also included. So here are my questions. Why shouldn't French Jews be allowed dual citizenship? Has their solidarity with Israel over the decades damaged the people of France? Has it made them any less loyal citizens? Have they plundered France to aid and abet Israel? And why shouldn't a Jewish man be allowed to wear a head covering? What about his beard if that's part of his religious identification? Must he shave his beard too? And again, is Le Pen going to require Catholic priests and nuns not to wear the ritual attire or Catholics in general not to wear crosses? If not, why single out Jews? Why not deal with radical Muslims as such without penalizing everyone else, including moderate Muslims? So, again, some questions for Marine Le Pen and her party. Where are the Jewish terrorists in France? Why are you going to penalize Jews while seeking to discipline, deal with radical Muslims? Where are the Jewish terrorists in France? How many have murdered policemen in cold blood while shouting out pro-Israeli slogans? How many have rammed trucks into civilians, slaughtering dozens? How many have massacred scores of concert goers? How many have attacked restaurants and killed as many diners as they could? How many have broken into magazine headquarters and butchered anti-Jewish journalists? I mean, these are all things that radical Muslims have done. Jews have done none of these. Jews have often been the victims. So why put a restriction on the Jewish population when it's radical Islam that you're after? Just deal with radical Islam and ask moderate Muslims, whoever they may be, whatever number they may be, to work with you against the plague of radical Islam. After all, if you have a list of casualties, people killed by Muslims worldwide, who's highest on the list? Would you say Christians? Well, Christians are very high on the list. But who's highest on the list? In all likelihood, other Muslims. This happens all the time. Muslims killing Muslims. I mean, just a few days ago in Afghanistan, Taliban recruited against an army base. The army had taken out a couple of their people, and they retaliated. They somehow got army uniforms. They pulled up to the base while the soldiers were stopping for prayer because they're fellow Muslims. And they slaughtered them. It was a long gun battle and explosives and things like that. Something like 100 soldiers massacred, a few Taliban casualties. Muslims killing Muslims. Shouldn't the moderate Muslims say we want to stand against this as well, unless they're not really moderate? Look, once you have a strongly nationalist government, it is very easy when things go bad to scapegoat a minority group in your midst. And all to happen, and by the way, it can go with extreme left, extreme right, but all too often, Jews have gotten scapegoated. Do you know during the Black Plague in Europe that killed as much as one-third of the population, who got blamed for starting it? Jews! Poisoning the wells! Allegedly using hearts of animals and elements from the Lord's Supper and making some mixture to poison the wells. Did Jews die too? Yes. Did they die in as high number? No. Why not? Hygiene, Jewish law, various things that they practiced that kept them a little safer. They died too. No, they poisoned the wells. And in Germany, the rise of the Nazis, the Jews, it's their fault. Why is the economy crashing? Why is our country in such a mess? It's the Jews. So that's my concern in France. If Marine Le Pen was elected, she could do good in certain ways, in terms of working against radical Islam and the Islamization of France. She could potentially do good for her country by pulling them out of the European Union, the Brexit of France. Some would say it's a bad thing. Okay, that can be debated. But for sure, if she was elected with her current policies, even if she is not her father's daughter, even if she abhors anti-Semitism, the hyper-nationalism is dangerous and destructive. And because of that, I have concerns. Again, read my latest article at AskDrBrown.org. Oh, and we've got new videos up for you in our digital library. Let me check really quickly and just see our latest. We've got always new articles. Let's just see here in our digital library what's new. We've got the article on Marine Le Pen. Got an article, video, What Happens to the Baby When Daddy Becomes Mommy? An article, Are Universities Producing Spoiled Brats? A video, What is the Best English Bible Translation? And a bunch of others. So check these out. Is the pre-trib rapture biblical? All recent videos or articles on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Remember, friends, if you don't get my e-newsletter, sign up for today. I want to send you a fascinating free ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah. You get it when you sign up for our newsletter. Do it at AskDrBrown.org. From the elections in France to charges of sexual harassment against Bill O'Reilly, we've got you covered right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, I've got an honest appeal here, all right? No mockery, no intent to disparage whatsoever. But if you are an atheist or agnostic or simply a strong believer in Darwinian evolution, could you give me your perspective on something? We had the Earth Day March on Science March, so-called, on Saturday. Some say it was a great success. Others say it was self-defeating and even self-mocking. We'll come to that in a little while. But I saw a video today, and I posted it on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. And if you consider yourself an agnostic or an atheist or simply a proponent of Darwinian evolution, I'd love to hear from you today. Again, this is not to mock. This is not to disparage. It's to ask an honest question, 866-348-7884. And we've got a bunch of things to talk about. Donald Trump almost completing 100 days in office. How is he doing? Is he keeping his promises or not? How far have Democrats gone to be the party of death? A bunch of other things we want to talk about. I've been talking the first hour about elections in France and sexual harassment issues with Bill O'Reilly, but we'll mention a few things in that regard as well. But here's the video, and here's where I'd love to hear from someone who is a naturalist, who does not believe in God the Creator or in any type of intelligent design of the universe. So it's a video about the pufferfish, this little fish that is barely visible in its environment. Yet the male, and this is BBC Earth produced this. It's not produced by a Christian ministry saying, wow, look at this. It's BBC Earth. Here is this little fish, the male, and over 1 week, it barely sleeps because he has to do this in a certain period of time lest the current mess things up. He makes this amazing design. All he has is his fins, so he slides across the bottom of the water there, so the bed of the sea, wherever he is. And he, look at this, he makes this remarkable image. It's concentric circles with grooves coming in and out and mounds higher and lower. I mean, you'd think you have to design this. You'd have to step back and look at this. He's got a little brain. He's a little fish. He's got a little brain. Somehow he's able to make the mathematical calculations. And then if he's got if he sees little shells and things like that, he picks them up with his mouth, but then he uses them to smooth out grooves and things like that. And he does it. He does it so as to get the attention of the female. Can you explain to me, if you believe in Darwinian evolution, if you're an atheist or agnostic or simply believe in Darwinian evolution, can you explain to me how this tiny little fish, or his tiny brain in this fish, is able to make all these mathematical calculations? How it is that this now attracts the female? Who figured this out? And what were they doing to attract each other in all the millions of years that it took to evolve this behavior? And How can it be explained without some type of intelligent design? I'm talking just academically, intellectually. I don't see a logical answer. If you have one, give me a call. And I mentioned that not just because I saw the video today and posted it. Nancy sent it to me, then I posted it on our Ask Dr. Brown page. But also because a lot of what happened in the whole march in science has got nothing to do with science. It has to do with ideology. Ideology. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, let me just type this question out. As for evolving wings, how do we survive while we evolve them? Yeah, I'm interacting during the break with a gentleman who is answering my question on Facebook. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. And I asked the question about this puffer fish in the video. You've got to watch it. It's at the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. And I said this: how can anyone watch this video and not recognize that God designed this fish? Its tiny brain just evolved with the ability to do this, and it just so happens that the female fish is attracted to this? And how, pray tell, does the next generation learn to carry on this artful legacy? Or is it just instinct? So one answer was this. Evolution is about adaptation to the environment. Science has shown that animals naturally adapt. Over a million years of adapting, animals will change based on the environment, so it's not unreasonable to believe that this animal evolved exactly as it is. The female fish will be much like humans. We are attracted to any capability of survival and flourishing and passing on a strong genetic code. So I replied, how do these fish survive and multiply while the male was learning how to attract the female? And how does this tiny brain figure out the precise mathematical calculations to create such a balanced design? It's like saying we can evolve one day so that we jump to the moon. I think not. And the gentleman who actually was talking about theistic evolution, so seeing God involved, but seeing an evolutionary process. And I see, yes, the evolutionary process is within a species, modification of the species. I think we all agree on that. That's how God designed things, and that's the ability within a species, but not to get from one species to the next, or not to create life in the first place, or to create the universe in the first place. Yeah, someone said, yeah, the Big Bang did a lot. But yeah, the repercussions of the Big Bang is that billions of years later, you have this fish with a tiny brain who can do these mathematical calculations and produce something amazing. So the gentleman was having a civil dialogue, and he's explaining his answer to my question. How did these fish survive and multiply while the male was learning how to attract the female? How does this tiny brain figure out the precise mathematical calculations to create such a balanced design? It's like saying we could evolve one day so that we jump to the moon. I think not. He replied, it's all instinct. The females are attracted to the fittest for survival available to them. Same thing with humans. Female humans are attracted to wealth, health, and confidence. Also, to say that we could evolve to jump to the moon may be a bit of a stretch, mostly because our survival doesn't call for that sort of thing. If survival of the species called for flight, I'm sure the good Lord would allow us to evolve wings. But the question is, how do we survive until we evolve the wings? No, I don't believe we could evolve wings. All right? That's number one. I've seen no scientific reason that we could evolve wings. But number two, how do we survive while we're waiting to evolve wings? There's some predator that is trying to devour us and is going to wipe us out. And the only way we can get away from them is we have to get airborne. Well, so we're primitive, right? We don't have planes and all this stuff, right? So how do we get airborne? Well, the wings will evolve. Well, we're no longer a species at that point. We just got eaten up because we couldn't survive. You hide in caves. So we're going to evolve wings while hiding in caves? And what do the wings evolve out of? I'm here. I'm flapping. I'm sitting in my desk in my studio. I'm flapping, but I can flap a lot. I can keep flapping for years. I can flap all my life, and my kids could flap, and their kids could flap. We still don't have wings. So how do we survive? You see the problem. So I'm not being facetious. I'm not being facetious. I'm asking for a naturalistic explanation to this because as I look at it, I see none. And why, you say, well, the females are attracted to the males that do this, but why would a female be attracted to patterns in the ground? Oh, look at that. Wow. Why aren't the sharks attracted to that pattern? He must be really good, tasty. Let's eat him. He must be a really capable little fish. Why aren't fish of other species attracted? Why are only the females of that species attracted to that design? Trust me, you got to check out this video. You can see it again on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. And it's gotten, just on my page, it's gotten, I don't think I can see how many views it's gotten on my page, but it's gotten overall since it's been posted, like 26 million views. All right. And it's, again, about the puffer fish, and it's posted by BBC Earth. So that leads me now to the subject of science. I've been reading the writings of some scientific thinkers, and they have been downplaying the march for science. Either scientists or folks who engage with scientific thinking. William Briggs, writing on the stream, said this: I'm pleased to report the asinine march for, quote, science has been a dud. Organizers lit the fuse of what they thought was going to be an enormous stick of dynamite. Wait till you hear the boom, honey. But what they got was a tiny pop from a damp ladyfinger. Pop, no exclamation mark. The Independent quoted some guy called Peter Lipke who said, I'm a science professor. This prepped the reader, signaling some solid science was on his way. Lipke continued, the current administration has shown complete disregard for facts and the truth. Well, a lot of this is a reaction against Donald Trump downplaying the human element of climate change or the global crisis of climate change. And I want to make perfectly clear that I am a total non-expert on the question of climate change. If you want to get the top 10 million people to talk to about climate change, I'm not in that list, okay? The question is not, is there climate change? The question is, how much is being caused by human beings and how severe a problem is it? As followers of Jesus, I believe we should be good stewards of the earth. Just like if you inherit something, you're going to pass it on to the next generation. You want to pass it on in the best possible way to your kids, grandkids. Absolutely. And think in a multi-generational way. Absolutely. And the book of Revelation even speaks against those who destroy the earth. So healthy environmentalism, sure. Tree hugging, come on. The question is how much of the so-called science march was about real science and how much was it about pushing various ideologies? Well, here's an article on Pink News from the UK. Yes, pink as in gay. The headline says, Queer Trans Man Speaks at the March for Science. One of the speakers at the March for Science on Saturday was a transgender queer man. This is being reported by Joseph Patrick McCormick. Thousands took to the streets of Washington, D.C., as well as other cities around the world, to demonstrate against what they say is an assault on science and facts. Kellen Baker, a senior fellow with American Progress, spoke in Washington, D.C. about data and how it can be used to tell a story or provide a narrative. We all have a story. Mine is that I'm a public health geek and a policy wonk. I'm also a queer, transgender man. So what exactly does that mean for us? Let's parse that. A queer transgender man, so he is she. He is born female, but identifies as male now, and dresses as male, presents as male, maybe even had sex change surgery, don't know. But born female, then queer, what would that mean? Well, at least gay, if not beyond. So perhaps as a transgender man now, this individual is attracted to men. So why not stay a woman and be attracted to men? Oh, that shows you don't understand. You're transphobic. Okay. He said science is not neutral on political issues. Whoa. Science is about science. Science is not about politics unless the politics directly intersect with science. For example, science has nothing to say about whether we should build a wall to keep out illegal immigrants. Science could say this is the type of wall that would be the safest. This is the type of wall that would provide the most protection. This is the type of wall that would be the most long-lasting. This is the type of wall that would be the most difficult to breach. But it can't say whether you should build a wall or not. science could identify this is someone who is legitimately intersex, who has male body but with a mix of female chromosomes or chromosomal defect that makes him part male or female. Science can tell us that. Science can't tell us whether a man who identifies as a woman should be able to use a lady's bathroom. And in fact, it reminds me of a debate I saw with Richard Dawkins and John Lennox some years ago. Only watched the beginning of it. But Dawkins made this ridiculous statement about science and religion. I'll come to it on the other side of the break. Stay right there. You're listening to The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. So I do want to get your take. Donald Trump, we're coming to his first 100 days. How's he doing? If you voted for him, is he living up to your expectations? Are you giving him a thumbs up? If you didn't vote for him, is he confirming your worst fears? Or are you surprised by how he's leading? 866-348-7884. All right. Back to science for a moment. This is a statement made by, quote, a queer transgender man at the March for Science, the Science March in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. He said, science is not neutral on political issues. Advocacy is not a dirty word. Quote, science is objective, but science is not neutral. The poet Dante wrote that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who remain neutral in moral crisis. We cannot pretend we are above the fray. According to the diversity statement of the March for Science, of course there had to be a diversity statement. How utterly scientific. Sarcasm fully intended. Quote, people who care about science are an intersectional group embodying a diverse range of races, sexual orientations, gender identities, abilities, religions, ages, socioeconomic, and immigration statuses. So it has made judgment calls now. It has made judgment calls about gender identities. It has made judgment calls. We, the march organizers, represent and stand in solidarity with historically underrepresented scientists and science advocates. Well, hang on. Whoa, help me here. Help me here. It is, we are told, the overwhelming number of scientists who believe that human beings are causing global warming and it's dangerous. And it is a small minority and a vocal minority who are saying bogus, bogus, bogus. There's been manipulation of data. There's been exaggeration. Things have not gone according to the predictions and the etc. Even things are reversing in some other ways, so it's false. And where there is global warming taking place, you can't say it's caused by people. Okay. Well, then why aren't you standing with them? Why would positions like that have been completely out of place? I thought you're standing in solidarity with historically underrepresented scientists and science advocates. It seems that you are standing in solidarity with extreme left-wing views. Nothing to do with science. Nothing to do with science. The former atheist, now deceased, Anthony Flew, who became a theist before passing away, was a great champion of atheism for decades, one of the leading atheists in the world. That, as he explained his coming to theism and why he did, one of the things he explains is what science can and cannot say. Science cannot say that woman has a beautiful face. Because that's subjective. Science can say the woman's face is well proportioned. Science can say the woman's eyes are deep blue. Science can say that woman's hair is extremely thick. But science cannot say the woman has a beautiful face or that's a beautiful sunset. Because that is not a scientific evaluation. That is an aesthetic evaluation. Yeah, you're right, Matt, but that's another subject. Okay. So I'm watching this debate, Dawkins versus John Lennox, Richard Dawkins versus John Lennox. And John Lennox is from Ireland, and he has a PhD in mathematics and PhD in science, I believe. And he teaches at Oxford, I think, but he's Oxford and Cambridge educated, brilliant man, multilingual. And when I had him on the air a few years back, he was in the studio because he was speaking at an apologetics conference in Charlotte, North Carolina. And they're full of joy as well, and a very caring man and an unashamedly Christian man. I mean, I wish I had literally one-tenth of his scientific knowledge. I could do really well in debates then. If I had probably 1/100th of his scientific knowledge would be a massive boost from where I am. But well, man, 1/10, I'd debate any scientist or atheist out there if I just had more ammunition in that regard. And he's ridiculing the idea, John Lennox is, that the universe just came into being and human life just came into being by the freak products, as the freak products of random evolutionary processes. And Dawkins had made the statement that concepts like vicarious atonement are completely unscientific. I only watched it at one time and only part of it, so I don't know if Dawkins has made similar comments or how it came up, if it came up the rest of the debate. But I thought, what in the world are you talking about? Vicarious atonement is a totally theological and spiritual concept, saying that God can allow someone to suffer for another person's sins and bring that person forgiveness and redemption. So vicarious atonement is substitutionary atonement. So Jesus takes our place dying on the cross, right? That's vicarious atonement, substitutionary atonement. I'm guilty. I deserve the penalty. Jesus pays it for me. He suffers in my place. He pays the debt on my behalf. And through what he did, I'm forgiven. I'm freed. That is vicarious atonement. Dawkins said it's a completely unscientific idea. Paraphrase his words. I think, what do you mean scientific? Science does not intersect with that. Science does not intersect with the idea of God. All right? I mean, unless it could be demonstrated scientifically that a God or a deity does not exist, science does not intersect with that. Science does not intersect with the concept of human sin. Science intersects with aspects of human behavior. Is this behavior obsessive, compulsive? Is this behavior learned? What can be done to modify this behavior? Is this behavior healthy or unhealthy? Science can ask many of those questions and answer some of them. But science has no category about sin, guilt. It can talk about the emotions one experiences while feeling guilty, but it has no category for this. No category. And the idea of someone paying for the sins of someone else, it transcends science. It does not intersect with science. It's in a different world from science. When Dawkins says it's unscientific, again, I don't know the exact word he used, but it was very close to that, may have been that word. What Dawkins is saying is I, as a scientist, reject that idea. I, as a scientist, find that idea unacceptable. I, as a scientist, find that idea morally repugnant or whatever. I, as a scientist, reject that because it sounds like Christianity and I reject Christianity. That's all he is saying. That's all he could say. Sigh out loud together. So a lot of the so-called March for Science was not about science, it was about ideology. And I've read other scientists who said that it rejects, on non-scientific grounds, the ideologies it rejects. So it's a march against science more than a march for science. We come back. Donald Trump, how is he doing in his first 100 days?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the line of fire today. Donald Trump almost completing 100 days in office. How is he doing so far? Moments ago, literally moments ago, I posted a Twitter poll asking the question, how is he doing in your opinion? And I just gave four options. That's the max you can give, which were excellent, pretty good, pretty bad, terrible. All right, that was my poll question. Now, why is it not appearing as a poll here? No. Okay. Hopefully it will. 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think? How is he doing so far? Did you vote for him? Did you not vote for him? That's obviously going to influence how you think he's doing. I'm looking at an article on CBS News. Has Trump kept his promises for the first 100 days of his administration? And I'm looking at an article in the Washington Examiner by Byron York, Trump's 100 days in executive success. And then on the Daily Wire, we're nearing day 100. How's Trump doing so far on keeping his promises? So eager to see those results. But why is this not appearing as a poll on Twitter? That's odd. I'm going to have to perhaps redo that. All right. So what's your take? What's your take? Do you think he's doing great, but the secular media, liberal media is blasting him day and night, hence it looks bad? Do you think he's making a joke of the presidency? Do you think finally someone's standing up doing the right thing? Do you think it's really a mixed bag? If you voted for him, is he living up to your expectations? Is he letting you down? If you didn't vote for him or specifically voted against him, is he living up to your negative expectations? Is he surprising you in any positive ways? 866-348-7884. Just some other political news. An article on Red State that was posted yesterday afternoon by Terry Kristoff. Democrats just confirmed they are the party of death. Well, they've done it. The Democrats have finally confirmed that they will no longer support pro-life candidates from their party. In a statement released Friday, Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez said, quote, every Democrat, like every American, should support a woman's rights to make her own choices about her body and her health. That is not negotiable and should not change city by city or state by state. At a time when women's rights are under assault from the White House, the Republican Congress, and in states across the country, we must speak up for this principle as loudly as ever and with one voice. He had got lambasted by the far left wing of his party, according to this article, for supporting pro-life Democrat Heath Mello, who is running for mayor of Omaha, Nebraska. The DNC chair had ironically enough voice to support for Mello during a recent nationwide unity tour. The pro-abort radicals at NARAL were having none of that, calling the DNC support of Mello politically stupid. There you have it. Pro-life Democrats, you've got no place in the party. That's self-evident to me for a while. Anyway, the actions today, this is NARAL Pro-Choice America President Elise Hoag. The actions today by the DNC to embrace and support a candidate for office who will strip women, one of the most critical constituencies of the party, of our basic rights and freedom, is not only disappointing, it's politically stupid. Ah, so pro-life Democrats, goodbye. Get out. We don't want you. You're not welcome. That's the message being sent. The DNC's decision leaves pro-life Democrats in the lurch. This is especially an issue for Southern Democrats whose constituencies tend to be pro-life or at the very least favor restrictions on abortion. Democrats, keep destroying yourselves. Keep destroying yourselves. By God's grace, America is going to reject this mentality of death. We'll be right back.
Light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. By the way, on the flip side with Democrats, Michelangelo Signorelli, writing on HuffingtonPost.com, queer voices, are some Democrats going soft on LGBTQ rights in the age of Trump? So not for everyone living in North Carolina, not only is there continued outrage over the partial repeal of HB2, which gay activists say was no real repeal at all. They're angered with Roy Cooper, who was elected with one of the major pushes being to get rid of HB2. So not only so, to add insult to injury for Signorelli, there is the possibility that the Democratic Governors Association is actually going to hold a meeting in North Carolina, a policy conference in North Carolina. How could they do that? That would be rewarding North Carolina. We shall see how these things play out. Will there be a pushback, a backlash against the LGBTQ extremism? So, Donald Trump, how's he doing? CBS News says Trump kept his promises for the first 100 days of his administration. He laid out a 100-day plan to make America great again in October. He promised to work with Congress to introduce the following broader legislative measures and fight for their passage within the first 100 days of his administration. 10 measures were: 1, Middle-Class Tax Relief and Simplification Act; 2, End the Offshoring Act; 3, American Energy and Infrastructure Act; 4, School Choice and Education Opportunity Act; 5, Repeal and Replace Obamacare Act; 6, Affordable Child Care and Elder Care Act; 7, End Illegal Immigration Act; 8, Restoring Community Safety Act; 9, Restoring National Security Act; 10, Clean Up Corruption in Washington Act. Now, I just have a question. Would anyone, even Donald Trump, think that realistically, they could pull this off? Would anyone think that in 100 days you could pull off just, there's no way you get all that through Congress, okay? For his part, Donald Trump told the Associated Press last week that he shouldn't necessarily be held accountable in these promises because much of the foundation's been laid. Things came up. I'll give you an example. I didn't put Supreme Court judge on the 100-day plan, and I got a Supreme Court judge. So April 29th is the 100th day in office. There's an evaluation here about how is he doing that comes out, you know, this basically the way it's going to be is the liberal news sites say he's not doing well, and the conservative websites say he's doing well. Basically, that's my just glancing at a number of articles today. So Washington Examiner, an executive success. That's how it rates his first 100 days. On the executive action front, Trump has kept a significant number of his promises. Campaign, he promised to begin the process of selecting a Supreme Court justice. Gorsuch is now on the court. He promised to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. As president, he did it. He promised to require that for every new federal regulation, two existing regulations must be eliminated. As president, he did it. He promised to lift the Obama-Clinton roadblocks on the Keystone Pipeline. He did it. He promised to begin removing the more than 2 million criminal illegal immigrants. He's doing it. And then it evaluates the others. Let's just see before I go to the phones. Ben Shapiro, Daily Wire. Now, I'd say this would be a pretty objective account because Ben's a strong conservative, and he was never Trumper, but strongly opposed Trump in many ways. And by the way, just looking at a poll, it says 96% of those who voted for Trump said they'd vote for him again. And interestingly, with all the negative press coming his way and with the gaffes and with his press secretary, Sean Spicer, messing up at times and things like that, what's fascinating is that a recent poll said that if he ran against Hillary Clinton, he'd beat her today 43% to 40%, which means the percentage has even gone up. The percentage, because remember, he lost the popular vote but won the Electoral College. So there's even been a shift. And maybe the reason is people realizing Hillary Clinton would have been an absolute disaster. And Trump's being Trump, the good and the bad. Interesting. How has Trump done? Let's see what Ben Shapiro has to say. So he's got his list on cleaning up government. First, propose a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress. No, he hasn't done it. Second, a hiring freeze on all federal employees. Yes, then lifted it. Third, requirement that for every new federal regulation, two must be abolished to existing. Done it. So let's see. I'm not going to go through every one here. He's got it. No, hasn't done it. Yes, but lifted. Yes, 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 but undercut by his own administration. No, which complete ban on foreign lobbyists raising money for American elections. On protecting American workers. Yes, although not totally clear in terms. Let's see. Yes, yes, no, yes, yes. Just looking at this, it's okay, mixed, but comes out with a lot of yeses that he has done a lot of what he's promised. That's interesting. Trump knows he hasn't fulfilled his largest campaign promise to easily fix government with the brilliant skill of a businessman, and that's why he blamed the presence of his 100-day plan on somebody. Yes, he really said that, but here's the bottom line. It's all too early to tell how Trump is doing. Some of his actions have been terrific. Some have been garbage. Some haven't taken place. Some of his rhetoric has been useful. More hasn't. The bag is mixed. Anyone who tells you anything different is selling you something. That sounds like a fair evaluation, as I expected it would be. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Gerald in Lexington. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks very much. And I would agree 100%. You stole my fire a little bit. I was going to name some of those things you named off. But he is definitely doing a great job. And if I may say, some people may like not like this out there, but honestly, I just my opinion, and I just think business-wise, he's doing a great job. He just knows, and I think, really, honestly, I think the best businessmen in the world are from New York. And I'm from there originally, so maybe I got a bias, maybe so. I don't care for their attitudes up there, but they are great businessmen. And as a little side note, you're talking about the Democratic Party. I've always said the D stand for death, the death of the unborn, the death of marriage, the death of God, and now the death of gender.
Mm.
And they are fulfilling it big time. Party of death, just like devil came to kill, steal, and destroy. They're doing it. I hate saying, but that's a fact.
And again, for those Democrats that do not support the radical agenda, it does raise a question, because many say, well, I disagree with Republicans on this and this and this, but the agenda of Democratic Party is increasingly radical. So, Gerald, give me one example. You're obviously a Trump supporter. Give me one example of where you think Trump has made good business decisions.
The first one is the Keystone Oil Pipeline. That's the first one. That they talked about it going through, you know, because environmental issues. Have you ever seen a map of all the pipelines in the United States?
Nope.
It is unbelievable. Where it's a spider web of pipelines. So that was just a big lie about what environmental issues, whatever. So that, to me, because of energy, you know, we're trying to shoot for energy America, you know, more so. And to me, that was the A number one first thing he did. I think that was A number one business wise.
I would say
that would be A number one.
All right. Hey, I appreciate the call. Thank you for weighing in clearly. And hey, I'm a New Yorker, so I understand about the good business and I understand about the attitude. 866-348-7884. There's an article on the stream.org from Rachel Delguidis. I'm not sure I pronounced the name correctly. What else is new? 11 ways Trump has rolled back government regulations in his first 100 days. As he reaches his 100th day in the White House on April 29th, he will have worked with Congress to rescind more regulations using the Congressional Review Act than any other president. According to Representative Doug Collins in Georgia, we're excited about what we're doing so far. We've done more than ever has been done in the history of Congress with the CRA, the Congressional Review Act. That's the tool Trump and lawmakers are using, allowing Congress to repeal executive branch regulations. Once the House and Senate pass a joint resolution disapproving of a particular regulation, the president signs the measure. And it gives a list of 11 regulations concerning the coal mining industry, regulations defining streams in the coal industry, regulations restricting firearms for disabled citizens, a rule governing the government contracting process, a rule covering public lands, and it goes. To be candid with you, I'm unfamiliar with almost every one of these resolutions here. But apparently in deregulation, people are rating him well. And then let me just look at this polling data here. Americans size up Trump's first 100 days. Let's see what polling says. We'll be right back. Oh, my conversation with alt-right folks. Yeah, all right. Stay tuned. You're not going to believe this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So within a few minutes on Twitter, I was accused of being an anti-white racist and then accused of wanting to put blacks back in slavery. Seriously. I'll explain in a moment. Michael Brown here. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. Be sure to visit sdrbrown.org and check out my latest articles and videos, all right? You'll be equipped, you'll be encouraged, you'll be helped, you'll be challenged. sdrbrown.org. And do you get my weekly emails with updates of latest videos, latest articles, or perhaps key things that are going on? If for example, our new TV broadcast, you say, I don't know about those. You don't know about Word on Fire? You don't know about Line of Fire TV? You don't know about how to watch in the States or around the world? You would have if you're getting the emails. So here's how you do it. And when you sign up to get our emails, I want to send you a free ebook. I've got a fascinating ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah, based on many years of study, but put in simple, eye-opening terms. Yeah, and it's free when you sign up to get my emails. So here's how you do it. You go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And right there on the homepage, you'll see it. Get our weekly updates and free ebook. Just sign up for that. Just take you a few seconds to do it. When you're there, check out our special resource offers as well, or find out how to become a torchbearer. And then we've got our recent articles and videos there all waiting for you. 866-348-7884. One of my recent articles asked the question, are universities producing spoiled brats? So before I get to my alt-right conversation, let's see. Americans size up Trump's first 100 days in post-ABC poll. So Washington Post and ABC. Trump's disapproval is 53%, all right, which getting close to his 100 days is much, much higher. Barack Obama's was 26%, George W. Bush, 32%, Bill Clinton, 39%, George H.W. Bush, 22%, Ronald Reagan, 19%, Jimmy Carter, 18%, Gerald Ford, 33%. So it's the highest disapproval rating for any president going back to Eisenhower. Now, there's a simple answer for that. Two choices, in my view. One, he's doing a terrible job. Two, secular media is blasting him day and night, and people have a certain perception based on that. But here's where it gets interesting. 53% see him as a strong leader, but most doubt his accomplishments, honesty, and empathy. But then check this out. 88% of Trump voters think he's accomplished at least a good amount so far. But others, obviously a minority, are strongly critical. So of Trump voters, do you approve or disapprove of the way Donald Trump is handling his job as president? 94% approve, okay? 94% approve. That's significant. 3% no opinion. Only 2% disapprove. So those who voted for him are speaking very strongly on his behalf. Again, we're early on, time will tell, but whether you voted for him or not, whether it's been a dream come true for him to be president or the nightmare of your life, either way, pray for him. Pray for him. On my Twitter poll, which is, what, 27 minutes old? So just getting the first few responses coming in. Let's see. Where are we here? Once again, it appears as a poll, and then it disappears as a poll. I'll find it. I'll get the data for you. But why? Phyllis says, wonderful, fabulous, marvelous, fantastic, super grand, best ever, couldn't be better, superb, delightful, excellent, 5 stars. Okay. Someone else says, can we choose eh? But we'll get those results for you. It's just, again, out of curiosity. But my dialogue with some folks on the alt-right. Oh, very, very interesting. One gentleman said this about me. Anti-white Jewish activist Dr. Michael Brown supports ethno-nationalism for Israel, but not for whites. And I mentioned this, first time in my life I've been called an anti-white Jewish activist. And then moments later, I'm told I want to re-enslave blacks. But seriously, from someone else. So what's fascinating was folks were responding to an article I wrote a few days ago. Again, you can see it in my digital library at sdrbrown.org. It's called 5 Reasons Why I Categorically Reject the Alt-Right Version of Jesus. My reasons: Jesus was a reconciler, not a racist. He was a servant, not a supremacist. While not a racist, he was king of the Jews, not part of the KKK. While a devoted member of the people of Israel, he was not a hyper-nationalist. He did not equate military might with strength. That's what I wrote. Again, I nuanced different points and explained things in further detail. So based on that, I'm an anti-white Jewish activist. I support ethno-nationalism for Israel, not for whites. Israel has 20% Arab population, which is overwhelmingly Muslim. 20% Palestinian population within what is recognized as Israel. 20%. Nobody's arguing about that. And when I say nobody, I mean the vast majority of Israelis. Yeah, as long as we're living peacefully, that's fine. As long as we have a Jewish state, because it's the only one on the planet. So it means that you need a Jewish majority. But it's the only place on the planet. And it has nothing to do with race, right? Because or skin color or ethnicity, because there are Jews from all around the world. So it's race, but not ethnicity, you could say. And it's religion as well. But you can be a secular Jew. You can be a non-believing Jew. You can be a Jewish Buddhist. You can be a practicing Muslim. You can be Palestinian. You can be Druze. You can be one of these minorities. You're perfectly welcome there. Just don't try to kill us and overthrow our country. And you're perfectly welcome here. You live here for decades, great. You got big families, great, fine. Just don't try to kill us. That would be the position. And let us have our majority. What's that got to do with white supremacy in America? I'm all for healthy nationalism and secure borders, but I believe we should have godly Christian values in the midst of what we do. And I believe we continue to be a cultural melting pot. As long as you become part of America proper, embrace who we are and become part of us, well, great. What's the issue of your skin color or ethnic background? If we are more dark-skinned in the future, more light-skinned in the future, or what's that got to do with anything? As long as our fundamental values are preserved, which have nothing to do with white supremacy. You denounce ethno-nationalism for whites. Point me to an article where you advocate for open borders for Israel. I said, white is not a nationality. I'm for secure borders for American Israel. Keep the terrorist murders out for sure. So you're saying that unlike ethnic Jews, whites do not deserve to have their own countries? And I said, you believe America should be white only? That's sick. And for example, Israelis do not believe Israel should be Jewish only. And these folks, they say, look, we're not racist. We're not racist. But you better believe they're espousing racist views. And then when I quote George Washington in a positive way, in a letter he wrote to Jews, saying, hey, we don't tolerate bigotry and so on. Someone says, oh, well, Washington's a slave owner. You're trying to put blacks in slavery again? Another day in the life of yours truly. All right, friends, join me again tomorrow's broadcast. And be sure to sign up at AskDrBrown.org. Get our emails.